I've had a lot of failures and a lot of successes. I love the fail because I just know I'm one step closer to a success. So I've never really been scared of that happening. It's been, made a lot of money, lost a lot of money, and it's part of the game. Every time I fail, I'm one more step to a closer to a success. So
welcome to the Edge of Excellence podcast. This show is for current and aspiring leaders that are dedicated to showing up every day in their lives with excellence. We break down the careers of those excelling so you can understand what is out there and how to rise up in every field you choose. Let's get the show on the road, shall we? Your host has spent his life promoting global entrepreneurship, helping 20-somethings find their passion, and working to help others achieve excellence. CEO of CollegeWorks, Matt Stewart.
Welcome to the show, and thank you for listening. Don't forget to tell your friends about us. We got a great show today. We got Andrew Dickinson on. He's going to get into his travels around the world, visiting 80 countries, taking a year, partial sabbatical, partially working after helping to build a couple companies and moving on and doing it again. He's going to talk about designing life by your own standards and bringing the best to it. He's going to talk about living by saying yes and loving to fail, the essential part of success. Welcome to the show and welcome to the Edge of Excellence. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for making time out of your busy work and travel schedule to share your wisdom with the 20-somethings of the world. Welcome to the Edge of Excellence.
Thank you, Matt. Excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to hear all these stories about traveling the world. But before we get into your track record of helping organizations set records and working on startups in the automated retail business and the pilot's license and the dive master certification and the 80 countries you visited, I got to know, what is your definition of excellence?
So my definition of excellence is just designing your own life by your own standards. And simply put, once you figure out what you want to do, being the best at it. And working, all the way through. So in my 20s, for me, what that defined me is I want to make my first million. So everything I did in my 20s set to make a million. When I hit my 30s, I said, you know what? I want to have some more fun. So I started introducing a lot of hobbies and I got a ton of them. And then I added travel dialed it back on the business end and found a way to make money without having to work 120 hours a week.
Well, we're going to get deep into balance in this talk today, and we're going to get into your exciting life and your great career and the Disney Institute of Customer Service and spending a year traveling the world one country a week while making money. But before we do that, we got to go way back to Jesuit high school, where my dad also went, except his Jesuit high school was in Texas. And I need to know, what was life like in high school? Did you know you were going to want to travel the world? Did you know you were going to go into sales and sales leadership and VP and head of sales and all that? What was going on at Jesuit High School for you in Detroit?
So going back a little further, actually, I grew up in the DC area. And then my parents decided to pick us up and move us to Michigan halfway through eighth grade. So I was your typical 12, 13-year-old, didn't exactly like that. Acted out maybe
thanks,
a little
mom,
bit.
Thanks, mom and dad.
Yeah.
Perfect timing. Yeah. By the way, if you're listening and you haven't had kids yet, don't mess with your kids, especially if it's a girl, between seventh grade and 12th grade. Just stay where you're at, spend the money, stay in the house you hate, in the city you hate, the job you hate, because you know what's worse? Messing with an eighth grade girl. Now, Andrew was a boy, so it probably wasn't that bad, but don't move on your kids in high school. Okay, keep going. Sorry.
So I acted out, and that took me from doing the whole public school thing to now you're going to all boy private school.
Oh, it was a punishment for my dad. It was a reward for you. It was a punishment, huh? Oh, you've been so bad. You get to go to this great school with great teachers and have a great future. That didn't work, did it?
Yeah. But when you're 13, 14 and you're a boy, girls are attractive. So you start thinking about that and, hey, I don't want to, hang out with dudes all day, but it ended up being great. So freshman year, I finally found my niche and started playing baseball. I played baseball and golf in high school, ended up varsity in both, and then joined the debate team and also was a nerd and did a little bit of the science club and had fun with that.
So
If you're listening right now, and you're probably going to have kids at some point in time, maybe you don't have them yet. It seems to me that the key to raising a boy is get him away from the girls. That's basically what you're saying. For a girl, just do what they say. The boys, get them away from the girls. This is going to be the greatest episode ever. So basically, your parents were right. You're having a hard time. They screwed with you. I get it. You lose all your friends. Your whole life just got turned around. You start acting like a maniac. And they're like, okay, take the girls away. Put them in the Catholic school. And it worked. So you found instead of girls, instead of showing off, you started to find different passions, which you filled your life for. So the start of filling your life with passions was high school. And you said you did baseball and golf.
Baseball, golf. Yep. And then I also did debate. And which ended up being one of the best decisions I made. And then also I love science. So I always planned on being an engineer, and I always loved, you know, science and math. So I was a captain of our science team or whatever it was.
So you were in leadership at all these leadership roles and in varsity, trying to get into the University of Michigan with a focus, or you were just doing good and next thing you know, you got it.
I was doing good. I was lucky.
Focus. Were you focused on that or just?
No. So Michigan was my fallback. I got lucky for that. Yeah. Both my parents had gone there. So as part of the acting out phase, I definitely didn't want to go where they went. So my goal was to get into Columbia in New York, which I got waitlisted and ended up getting in. And then I saw the bill. And I realized that my parents weren't going to, you know, cover that bill. So Michigan was nice enough to give me some money. Yeah, man,
Shout out to them for knowing this girl thing, but they move you, then they won't pay when you get in. What sort of cheap ass parents are those? By the way, our audience sometimes gets into this victim mindset. So if you're listening right now, I'm making fun of you, getting this victim mindset where everyone's out to get them. But there's all these opportunities in this pain, right? And it turns out that studies show people that move more, their kids are better adjusted. So military kids are really well adjusted because they move all the time. Your parents kind of probably knew that. And then you have to make choices. So you had to decide. You got a pretty good second choice there in University of Michigan. I believe just like Santa Barbara, it wasn't as prestigious when you and I went to those two places and they became more prestigious. Am I right? Or was it that prestigious?
Well, it's because we went there. That's why. Yeah, 100%.
I think they're still ranked the same, but maybe we just didn't know how awesome we were. Okay, so you're kicking ass with passions. You're beginning to find these passions. And when you're in high school, you don't really know where you're headed, or you didn't know where you're headed. Did you realize that, you know, I'm kind of a passionate guy. I keep layering on baseball, golf, science, debate. I love it all. Could you see this path to the future of scuba diving and flying and traveling? And could you see it or no, not yet?
So not yet. No. I mean, actually, my goal, like I said, I was a science nerd. My goal was to be the first man on Mars. So that was, you talk about like writing your college essay. That was my college essay. So I got in to Michigan's aerospace program, and that's, so I was going to be an aerospace engineer. So that was my, you know, future. I've always been a Top Gun junkie. So the pilot thing was going to have to happen.
You look like Maverick. You are Maverick.
I'll take that. Oh, I'll take that.
Your wife is stoked.
Make sure she hears that.
Yeah. So you're a Top Gun nut. You want to go into aerospace. You're at Michigan. So you get into Michigan.
Yep.
You're in the aerospace. Why didn't you follow through with that? What changed?
So, well, you know, one, Bush got rid of the flight program back in 08. But anyway, I actually got in really passionate about business through CollegeWorks. So
Were you one of the guys that I had a conversation with that you're like, I'm an engineer and I think I need to move into business? Because I always tell them, don't do that. Did we have that conversation?
No. The University of Michigan had that conversation with me.
They did. Yeah. Okay. My daughter's having that conversation with Northeastern about chemistry, I think, next week.
Yep. So they decided, hey, you need to take a step back and figure out what you're going to do. And I said, okay, well, I got all these credits now and, you know, a couple failures, but all these credits, what's the easiest degree I can get? Econ degree ended up being the easy way out.
That's not too easy either. Your easy way out is pretty hard. Well, just a shout out for people that are in this boat right now. If you're still in college and you're listening, my daughter's there. She was a chemistry major. I thought, should she be a chemistry major? Really struggling with it. I gave her a disc test And it's very obvious when you take that test what you should and shouldn't do. And I've been begging her to take the test. I give it to hundreds of people a year. She wouldn't take it. So there's an episode, episode 3, that talks about the DISC test. If you don't know what you should do for a living, take the DISC test, download the white paper. It'll help you figure out if science is your thing or sales is your thing, because different people are built for different things. So you're finding out that aerospace engineering isn't your thing, but you still got the mathematical mind. You do the economics. And then you came and worked with us at CollegeWorks, and we had a good 3 years. So that was that sophomore, junior, senior year?
No, actually, it's 4 years. So it's freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. And then I did a super senior for school.
Did you pay for college with your CollegeWorks money, or did your parents pay?
I paid. I paid for
Okay, so tell us about that. Why did you do that? You're an aerospace engineer at the time. Why'd you do the CollegeWorks thing if you wanted to be an engineer?
So, you know, I've always worked. I've had a job since I was 9. I started doing paper route, caddying. I did pretty much every odd and end job you could think of. Bagged groceries, worked at Burger King. Needed to make money and was told I could make a lot of money selling paint jobs. So I got into it. I got excited about it. Did really well my first year. And had a lot of fun doing it and decided to come back and, you know, explore the route of actually training others how to run their own business versus doing it yourself. So it was special for sure.
So I listened to interviews. So, by the way, I probably spend 5 hours a week, and my business partner's like, why are you doing that? Watching people do meetings, watching people do interviews, and we're just constantly coaching now. Everybody, that we call it the shadow web of awesome. And I hear the interviews, it's like, going to be miserable. You're going to work all the time. I'm like, it's 20 hours a week, guys. What are you talking about? But people think 20 hours a week is all the time, and you're going to fail, and you got to make the money yourself. And I was sitting there thinking, wow, man, you know, I get how it relates to my career, but this sounds miserable. And I can tell them that I didn't have a miserable time. So what was fun about working your ass off, going out on weekends all weekend long, getting told no by people, having to hire people, maybe your friends, and then having to fire them, dealing with customers, some of them. And it's always the negative. You don't talk about the 35 customers that invite you to dinner and give you things and tip you. You don't talk about all the wins when you actually close a deal. What was fun about all that hard work for you as a freshman?
I just enjoyed learning how to run a business. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed going out. As crazy as it was, the first weekend knocking on doors, you know, I'm in Michigan, right? So it was snowing. It was probably 6 inches of snow on the dang ground, and I'm running door to door, and I was getting a lot of people saying yes. So you know, they got me excited. So you start doing that, and then we had a good team. My DM, Kerry Game, was a great team builder, one of the best I've ever met, and that includes my adult life.
I hear that all the time. I hear that a lot. And our focus is to be the greatest learning experience you ever have in your professional career. And I think it is for most people, but I hear it all the time, the best team maker ever. And it's a 22-year-old that just graduated from college. Crazy.
Correct. Yeah. So he did a great job. He put us together. So it became quite the, you know, we were a boys club. There was, I think he had like 7 or 8 guys on his team, and there's 4 or 5 of us that really became good friends. And we still talk to this day. And so we'd go hustle and knock on doors, go make some phone calls, and then go party. And, you know, that affected school a little bit, but, you know, I learned just an absolute ton. And my friend group, I started, you know, I went to Michigan, I'm from Michigan. So I had a solid friend group going into Michigan, but I really, you know, I guess got away from them fast, which was a big benefit for sure. Cause I was able to, you know, grow this core with some really outstanding people
that were lifting you up too.
They're
on the same, that you're investing time with the right people. You are the sum of your 5 closest friends. So you got these people that are trying to kick ass and working hard, and you had that work hard, play hard. So usually what you're supposed to do, by the way, is do all the hard work, do your calls, study for an hour or two, then go out and do the party. You just skip that little step.
Skip the little, the middle step. Yeah. Yeah.
But okay.
Lots of partying, work hard, play hard, have fun, I think was the core, all right?
Yeah, it was.
And
still is.
It's perfect. Yeah. So no, it took that to heart, and definitely, you know, we did a great, you know, it was fun being in Michigan. Is we'd go to Windsor, you know, a couple times a summer. It was a blast. God,
we do it once now.
Oh yeah. Well, we did it multiple times.
Yeah, that's all.
Leave some of those stories for another time. But yeah,
I still go. I go every year. Windsor, Canada. And I hear it described as the Vegas for 18-year-olds.
It is. In Michigan, I mean, and anyone that listens to us from Michigan will attest, at 19 years old, I mean, that's your, it's basically having your 21st birthday in the U.S. You go there for your 19th and you have a blast.
My daughter's coming home from her freshman first semester in London tomorrow.
Okay.
Where they have a drinking age of 18 and she's coming back to 21. I don't think you should go abroad your first year because it's just disappointing after that.
It kills you. Yeah.
Okay. So you're enjoying learning how to run a business. You're enjoying, yes. Getting back to your definition of excellence, define life by your own standards and be the best at it. So are you starting to form your standards here at College Works? And what does that mean, define life by your own standards and be the best at it?
I think it was maybe sophomore, maybe junior year, our team. So when I was a DM, we coordinated with Pennsylvania. And I think Lulu Deng was the VP at the time down there. And our team went down and met up with her. And we went and saw this guy speak, Jack Daly. And Jack, that opened my eyes, right? So he ended up writing a book, Life by Design, a lot long later. I'm sure you know Jack.
Yeah, I'm actually friends with him.
Yeah. So
I've known him since for 30 years.
Well, so that guy really, was a big changer.
Yeah, he's the king of sales speaking.
See, the king of sales speaking, but what I really took away from him was really just his goal setting. And the guy is king of goal setting. So his annual goal list that's 10 pages long. I tried to emulate that. Mine's, 3 pages. But, it's something that definitely keeps in check and it makes you spend time. I do a weekly recap of it. I write notes daily, but I do a weekly recap and, quarterly and definitely an annual to make sure that I'm going the way I want to go. And that started then. So at 18, and that was great.
So I don't get to meet all the district managers at College Works. And every year I want to spend time with all the district managers. And every year I don't. So last year I decided that I'd start doing life planning with the district managers. I just do it with the district managers, but once a month we do a 30-minute meeting about them. And then I build the life plan every week when they're making their schedule, they look at their little life plan. And what we're talking about is building a purposeful life. And what I'm trying to do is brainwash them. So every Sunday for the rest of their life, when they're thinking about work and family and kids, little picture of me pops in their head and says, oh, I need to think about myself, because you got to take care of yourself first. You got to put your oxygen mask on before you put your kid's oxygen mask on. And we're going through this process. And so they have these 90-day goals. And, after 60 days, okay, I already do that. I said, this will be part of your life. So what happens when you lead a purposeful life? What happens when you do goal setting and you do an annual plan and you do a weekly review? The things you want to do get done, and the changes you want to make become part of your life. So, they want to be balanced. Well, now they're all balanced. They want to have better relationships with their parents and their friends. So they set these goals, Friday friend calls and call my mom on Sundays. And then it just becomes their routine that they don't think about. So now I understand what you mean. You set goals, you set annual goals, you have a purposeful life, you're reviewing it weekly, making notes daily. And over the course of a couple years, the things you want to master are mastered. The goals you set are, so that's how you become a pilot and a family person and going to work and kicking ass and get master certified for scuba and come up with a goal to go to take a year and go around the world and visit 40 countries. You don't just wake up one day and do that. You're not excellent at balance. You have to work at it over years. So you go with Lulu Deng, who I did a podcast with her. I also did a podcast with her husband. Both of them are. And so you go with Lulu to see Jack Daly, who I remember she saw him a couple times and we had him come speak at College Works once. You realize that I need to have this purposeful life. I need to design my life. And that's carried with you. That you developed your definition of excellence and your pattern for excellence sophomore year of college.
Correct. Yeah.
And you never know when it's going to happen. You never know. You drove all the way to Pennsylvania to go see some weird guy and boom, it happens. Or you're talking to a friend. If you're listening in the car, you're talking to a friend at a bar and boom, it happens. Or you get a teacher in school or there's a mentor that says something. You never know. You just have to be open to it. So you're just absorbing knowledge and enjoying the yes world of sales and boom, Jack hits you. Okay. So that explains it. And then be the best at it. Is that focus every week and moving through the plan and practice?
Yeah. I mean, I just think that, if you want to be a teacher, be great. If you want to sell hot dogs, be great. If you want to, you know, play video games, be great. Whatever you want to do, just be great. And you can make money doing anything. I mean, Oscar Mayer Wiener is a billion-dollar hot dog company. So, I mean, really, that's, it doesn't matter necessarily what you do. And I think people get so hung up with, hey, I need to be a doctor, or I need to be a lawyer, or I need to be this or that. You know, I wanted to be an aerospace engineer that, you know, went to, hey, I'm going to be an analyst on Wall Street, to I ended up selling cars. And that's how, you know, my adult career. And, you know, I made a millionaire at 27 selling cars.
Because you were one of the best at it.
It's one of the best, right? And so, you know, there's so many different ways to make it in this world if you're open to it. Talk about saying yes. Yes. I lived by saying yes, especially in my 20s. Now, I've learned to say no a lot more lately. But early on, I said yes to everything. And I don't regret that a bit.
I hate to say this, but I do a one-year plan every year. And one of my one-year plans, and I don't remember when, included the focus on saying no. I literally set a goal for that because I was just getting overstretched. So that's balance, right? You need to, every once in a while, you got to reset and think, okay, am I spending my time with the right friend group? I've had to say, no, I'm not spending time with you anymore, Mark, because you're sucking me dry. Am I spending the right time with my family? And I've noticed that I had it actually in 2010 when you used to work with me. I had gotten off that EO gig and it was time to focus on family. So you're aware of things. You're paying attention. You're open. You're getting into this yes mindset. You go see Jack Daly as a sophomore in college. And so did you start to shift from engineering right then? Did you know you wanted to go into sales? And, you know, crazy, we can get into automotive sales because, you know, it's easy to compete in an area where people have bad reputations, right? And I know you always say your people are your number one asset. Take care of your people and they take care of you, the customers and the business. So maybe you brought that into an industry that didn't have that and helped you be successful. But did you know you were going that way to sales as a sophomore? Or were you still looking at all these different options?
No, I was still convinced I was going to be, you know, the first man on Mars.
Okay.
But
that's a good lesson for our listeners. I was convinced I'm going to be a lawyer and I would have been mediocre. And you were convinced you're going to be the first man on Mars and the school told you you're going to be mediocre. And you have that bummer day when you realize I wanted to be a doctor before that. I pass out at blood. You have that bummer day when you realize your dreams aren't going to come true. And then the next day you reset your dreams. So you wanted to be on Mars, but in the back of your head, you're kind of clicking in on some other things that you might want to do. Then the school comes and talks to you. And how many other things did you look at before sales?
Oh, so I actually, it's funny. I ended up graduating in December, and I had a job to be an analyst in New York for S&P lined up as a 2-year rotation program, but it didn't start till July. And I was like, well, shoot, I got 7 months. I need to make money. So I ended up also taking a job to be a finance manager, didn't know what it was, at a car dealership in Tampa, Florida. And I was like, well, shoot, I'm in Detroit. It's December. It's miserable. I can go to Florida on a 6-month guarantee. They'll help pay me. I'll play some golf. I'll work a little bit and I'll move to New York in the summer and life is good.
Are you thinking balance at the time? Work hard, play hard?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I thought it was going to be a little bit more balanced. It ended up being more of an 80 to 100 hour gig. And I think I played golf maybe once the first 6 months. Yeah. And then I ended up making the phone call. I ended up like falling in love with the people I was working with and realized just how much opportunity there was because, yeah, like you said, if you go to an industry that's doesn't have the best reputation and you apply good skills, you can crush it. And I figured out 2-3 months in that, oh my goodness, I've got a golden egg in front of me. And, you know, living in Florida is amazing. And it's a third of the cost or half the cost of living in New York. Let's stick this out and try this out for a little bit. And I stuck with it.
So you called S&P, said, thanks for the killer offer, the killer deal. Serendipitously, I found something better.
Correct.
Awesome. So you go into that and just accidentally stumble into your career, just like I accidentally stumbled in my career. You had a full plan, just like I had a full plan. You had a secondary plan, just like, and I was goal-oriented at the time. Like I'm going to be, I did College Works so I could learn to run a business. Because I was convinced I'd be a partner in half the time. That was my whole reason. And I didn't know what business was. I don't know why I thought I'm from New Mexico. We don't have business there. I don't know why I thought that. But then I'm like, wait a second. Why do I want to leave? And kind of also the same. It's an industry with a bad reputation. And you can bring great customer service. And there's no other painting company that does life coaching. Probably no other company where the CEO does life coaching of their employees. You just bring this excellence into an industry that, you know, doesn't have excellence, and you crush it. So you're crushing it in Florida. You're working in this business as a finance manager. What happened next?
So, like I said, my goal in my 20s, you know, by the age of 30, I had my 10 different things listed out. The top of one was my focus was, hey, how do I become a millionaire? That was my goal. So right, wrong, indifferent, that was my goal. And everyone's got a different one. And I said, hey, okay, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to have to work my tail off and I'm going to have to learn how to grow in a business. So yeah, I was a finance manager, which is, for those that don't know, that's the person that does all the paperwork at the end that everybody hates to see and sells warranties and takes care of interest rates and that stuff. So, but the next step in the car dealership and in growing is become a sales manager and running the sales floor. So you don't just get that on my days off. So you get a day or two off, technically speaking. In Florida, dealerships are open 7 days a week. So on my days off, I went in and played sales manager with the sales managers. And I learned their skills. Not being paid. No.
You shadowed them.
I shadowed them. And I would step on and like, and there's days off and they needed help. I would step in and help them out.
Are you enjoying the show thus far? We go through so many resources and links with this podcast, it's tough to keep up. I get it. That's why Matt and the rest of the team put together the Edge of Excellence Bundle. In it, you'll find different tools that relate to overarching themes and topics of the show. Things like DISC assessment tools, time management strategies and tactics, stress and anxiety management tools, exclusive videos and episodes from this podcast that is not released anywhere else, and so much more. The best part? As a valued listener of the show, you can access the Edge of Excellence Bundle 100% for free of charge. That's right, for simply being awesome and tuning in. To get access, all you have to do is go to www.collegeworks.com/podcast and fill out the short form there for us to get the bundle over to you. Once again, it's www.collegeworks.com/podcast. Now, back to the show.
So let's just pause on that for a second for the listeners, because that's the type of thing that used to happen a lot that I don't see happening so much anymore. So if you're listening to this and you want to travel the world and go to 40 countries in 40 weeks and still counting, the year isn't over yet. You want to be a millionaire by 27. What are you doing that no one else is doing? What are you doing to deliver value to the company? That's what you were doing. You're working for free, delivering value and learning. I think a lot of times the people listening to this think, what will the company do for me? You're thinking, what can I do for the company and what can I do for myself?
100%.
All right. So you're shadowing on your days off. No one else is doing that, right?
No. In fact, you know, my team, and I put a good team around me, and they hated it because we have like days when people could leave early. And on my early out, I didn't take it. And they're like, oh, I want that. I want that. I want that. And I'm like, no, you're scheduled till 9. I'm going to do this because I'm going to learn this. And they're like, well, you're an idiot. And I'm like, okay, I'll see you in 10 years.
Yeah.
And I did that. And then I became a sales manager. And then the next step is to be a finance director and run the finance team. So same thing on my days off, I went and shadowed the finance director and I became a finance director. And I got that opportunity at 25 and I was one of the youngest in the country. And then, you know, I fast forward, same thing, become a general sales manager and a general manager, you know, and you have to learn. The only way to fast track yourself is to learn every department. And it's either, hey, I'm going to either go work a year in every department. Well, that stinks because there's a bunch of different departments and I don't want to become a GM at 35. My goal is to be one at 27, 28. I was like, okay, well, how do I fast track this? I go spend all my days off learning. And so I would spend time in parts, I'd spend time in service. And
so you didn't have to work there a year because you shadowed a bunch of departments and figured it out a different way. You created a different path with your goal. You have this goal at 27. And then what do I need to change to get there? And this is how it works. And I have a whole episode on goal setting. So go look it up. I don't know what episode number it is,
but you figure out what the goal is. By 27, I'm going to be the GM. Is it possible? Maybe, maybe not. What do I need to change to get there? What do I need to do differently? So you're thinking about all that stuff, doing this stuff differently. And then you're the youngest GM or one of the youngest GMs in the country. By the way, there's another guy, Matt Manage, same thing. Did the same thing. And we'll just deal with the auto industry real quick. You've got the people that sell on the floor. You've got the finance people in the back doing the numbers that maybe are more analytical, maybe have that econ type degree where they're doing the math. You then move into finance director, then into sales manager. Then there's probably VP of sales. And then general manager is the person that runs the dealership or string of dealerships, right?
Correct.
So the general manager, everything stops on him. They're in charge of the vehicle maintenance area, all the people in there, all the supervisors. They're in charge of sales. They're in charge of finance. They're even in charge of the facility that you're in. They're running everything, part of hiring everybody, part of setting all the costs. They're running this overall business. And usually car dealerships are pretty big businesses. They're selling big ticket items and quite a few of them.
Yeah, we were multiple, like a $200 million business.
And you're running that at 27 years old.
Correct. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. And so what happened next?
So I got, you do that for, I ended up doing that till I was about 30. And you you do it for 8 years straight. So my first 6 months of being a GM, I didn't take a day off. And so when you're actually, I even went harder. So dealerships in Florida, once again, Florida's a different market than most of the world, but our service department opened at 7 a.m. Sales department closes at 9 p.m. Well, my service guys would be there at 5:30. My finance guys sign up the dealership would leave probably about midnight. So I can't tell you how many times I actually put in. It's tough to work. People say they work 100 hours a week. It is tough to actually be physically in a location for 100 hours. That is, you're 14 plus hours a day on average. And that's just, it's almost impossible to actually do it. I did it. And I did it for a long time. So I burned myself out.
Most of the guests I have on the show have done it. Now, some people will keep doing it. So if you want to be an iBanker, they test you for the first 2 years and you work 100 hours a week. But my wife's cousin is a big time iBanker. He worked that hard for many years. And at one point in time, he worked in London and his family lived in New York and he would fly home for the weekends. Then he moved to Hong Kong. Same thing. He lived in Hong Kong during the week and flew home on the weekends. I mean, it's a tough job, but that's what you have to do to get ahead. You got to work hard in your 20s to get ahead. So you put in the 100 hours a week, just like I did, and then you got a little burned out. I don't know if I ever really got burned out, but you eventually say, okay, there's other things. I got a wife, or I want a wife. I have kids, or I want kids, and you have to come up with some sort of balance. So for you, that meant changing jobs?
Yeah, so I took time off. I was fortunate enough to stack a little bit away, so I took some time off, and I went and did I started getting into travel. So I did Everest Base Camp, went to the Maldives, went to Singapore, went to Thailand, went around for about 6 months. And then came back and said, okay, I guess I should start working again. So I had, through connections, the guy who ran had sold us our CRM, doing another startup, and he needed a guy to come help him do sales. So I said, perfect. And he flew me to Destin, Florida, and we had a conversation, and I ended up coming on as his number three employee to help run his sales team. And this is in 2019 now. I was VP of sales for it was a tech startup within automotive. And that was next. So it was a different side of the desk. I went from being the GM and having every person in the world try to sell me something to being the guy that was trying to sell him the next best thing.
What sort of CRM?
So it was a software to help manage inventory. So it was an inventory management tool for the used car department. One of the biggest issues people realize, how much money goes into it and the cost on turn. So a big focus on most really good used car departments is, hey, how do I move these vehicles as fast as possible?
Because you're paying interest on what the purchase price was. So there's a finance. So the way dealerships work is you have the new cars that you're not paying for the inventory, right?
You do. Usually the manufacturer will give you a 80, 90, 100-day window of tax-free. So not tax-free, of interest rate-free.
Yeah, so you got 100 days or 90 days to sell a new car. Used cars, you're paying interest from day one. So correct. If you're paying, let's do the math, 10% interest and it costs $100,000, you're paying $10,000 a year for that car. or about $800 a month. So every month that goes by, you lose $800. And if you're making $5,000 on a used car, it sits there for a while, like any blue car, you're losing money. So this software helped them understand the financing cost and the cost of leaving the cars there, and helped them with their inventory management so they could push the cars that needed to get out or sell them for a loss or whatever.
Correct. Yeah. So then it's a different sell. So anytime you're selling to a GM, like you said, most of our sales are to the general manager. Well, the general manager is not the person actually using the tool. So our challenge when we started that is, okay, we'd go sell the GM. The GM would be in for it. We'd charge them $1,000 a month. But the challenge then is, hey, how do you get your people to actually use the tool? And once again, you talk about a business that has a lot of areas of opportunity. The GMs are so busy usually with dealing with everything that, you know, managing an extra tool becomes more of a headache. And
let me guess, yeah, you trained their team.
We did.
Yeah,
we did. We took that objection away.
You took that. We will train your team.
And we
took that objection away after getting that objection so many times. You went back to the drawing board. I have a goal. I need to take this objection away. You think of all the out of the box ways to do it, just like you did with your life. Come up with the idea, start pitching it to test it, and it works.
Correct. Yeah. So that was our big thing, because the tool wasn't, you know, it was a better way of doing it, but it wasn't like a completely mind blowing, you know, something new that no one had ever heard of before. It's been around. But the challenge was, hey, it's just another tool. And there's so many, the challenge with the auto industry, again, is it's from the 80s. I mean, all the systems that they used, none of them integrate. So, you know, how do you get somebody to use it when they've got 28 tabs already open on their browser as it is? How do you add a 29th?
Yeah.
And make it valuable? So okay. That was what we kind of figured out.
Okay, so let's just back up to this connections. So how do you... how do you maintain your connection? I'm sure you still do it. You're a GM. This guy's a vendor. All of a sudden, he brings you in as the third employee, and you're leaving a $200 million business you're running to go into a company that doesn't have any revenue or very little revenue. People talk a lot about networking. They talk a lot about doesn't matter what you know, it matters who you know, which is bullshit. It doesn't matter what you know or who you know. It matters what you do with what you know and who you know. So you have this guy running in and out of your office trying to sell you shit. How do you make that connection? What do you do in your life to maintain your connections and turn them into opportunities for you and for the person that you're connected to?
So it goes back to saying yes a lot. So the guy that hired me actually had just sold his CRM company. So he was the guy who founded the CRM company. He just sold it for $700 million. And I had made a connection with him through the general partner of the whole dealer group. There's four dealerships in it. And the partner was one of my really good friends. He had introduced, well, Hugh was the name of the gentleman that ran the CRM company, ended up hiring me. He came to us and wanted to test a lot of products out. So I always would say, yes, sure, I'll be your test store. I will do this. I'll give you feedback. I'll help you out. And so we developed a relationship that way. So fast forward a couple of years later, when he needed a guy to sell cars, not sell cars, sell software for him. And he knew that I was, you know, on the market. We got a phone call.
So that's what networking is. Networking is not trying to benefit yourself. It's not going out and seeking people to help you. That's not what it is. And that's what people think of. You're going the wrong direction. Networking is not a selfish action. It's a generous action that gets rewarded, even though you don't expect to be rewarded. It's palm down giving, where you don't want something back. So Andrew's helping the dude out. Yeah, go ahead. We'll waste our time testing your thing. We'll be your guinea pig. I like you. You're a cool person. I'll help you out. And eventually, when you do that enough, people say, hey, I want someone that helps people out to come work in my business. And this person's been so good to me, maybe I can be good to them. And that's how it works. You never plan on what you're going to get out of it. In fact, I don't want anything out. I actively work to not get anything out of the things I do for other people because I'm trying to pay other people back. But eventually, it comes around. So they realize they had to have you. You're this great guy that works all the time. You're helping them out. You got the right culture. You got the right values. And they bring you into that business. And you exited that business, right?
I did. So we actually, we started it a year before COVID. And as a software startup in automotive a year before COVID, when COVID hit, the only way to keep growing was actually to give it away for free. So long story short, it was actually my first time ever being fired from a job. So we talk about failure being a thing. I still keep in contact with the guy who fired me. So we're good. But
not fired, it's laid off, right?
Well, whoever you want to say.
No money to pay. Yeah.
Same. So I did. I had to let go of my sales team. And then our CFO called me the next day and said, by the way, I need you to be gone too. And I'm like, oh, what? So that was in, you know, March of or April, I believe, of 2020. But he ended up keeping it going. And I had a little tiny sliver of it. And he ended up selling it earlier this year for quite a profit. So it ended up being a good business.
So you still got a payday afterwards?
A little bit, yeah.
Little payday. And then so did you decide to take a year off in sabbatical, or have you been working while you're traveling?
So that was then. And then I ended up starting another business with a buddy during COVID. We opened a dealership. I went back to the automotive side, opened a dealership, got it running great, decided to exit that upon some pushing from the wife. We got married in 2021. So we were living in St. Petersburg, Florida. And the business we started was up in Jacksonville, Florida, which is 4 hours away. So I was going up there Monday through Friday, working with him. We built this great business. We built from selling nothing to selling 150 cars a month, which is pretty outstanding. And she kind of gave me the ultimatum in 21 when we got married, said, hey, you got 6 months, 8 months max to figure out if you're going to be working remote from St. Pete. And retail remote's tough when you really want to manage. I'm a hands-on manager and leader. And so, or we're going to move to Jacksonville, and God bless the people who live in Jacksonville. It's not for me. And I said, well, hey, what about option three? What if I just say I'm out and I'll help, you know, with the transition to the next guy to help him run it. And let's go have some fun. And that's what we did.
All right. By the way, if you want to find Andrew because you want to work with one of his businesses, or you have an idea that you want to share with him and bring him in, you can find him on LinkedIn, Andrew Dickinson, D-I-C-K-I-N-S-O-N, not E-N like I always spell it. D-I-C-K-I-N-S-O-N is where you can find him on LinkedIn. So you exited a second time.
I did. It's from another company.
Let's pause for a second.
Yep.
That's scary. It's pretty scary. First of all, it's pretty scary to get laid off. It's pretty scary to leave your cush job as a GM and go to a startup. Pretty scary to get laid off. Pretty scary to start another business. Pretty scary to, right when you get married, exit that business. So where do you get these guts? How do you evaluate this? For someone listening right now, they have some scary options. What do you do to decide on these scary options?
Yeah, I mean, I was 35 at the time, or 36, I guess, and decided to take a year off from work, which is when you typically in your mid-30s, you're continuing the gas down. And I completely took it off and went and traveled. And at one point we did a month in New Zealand, and we were living in a van. And I remember calling my mom, be like, aren't you proud of your 36-year-old son living in a van down by the river? But, you know, I guess it goes back to, I've had a lot of failures and a lot of successes. I love the fail because I just know I'm one step closer to a success. So I've never really been scared of that happening. It's been, you know, made a lot of money, lost a lot of money, and it is, you know, it's part of the game. And I like I said, I believe every time I fail, I'm one more step to a closer to a success. So it doesn't terrify me too much.
So you're in the middle of this year off.
Yep. So we're actually, we're 15 months in now. So it was September of 22 that we started this adventure.
And are you going back to work, or you're just retired?
Well, I'm still working. So I helped transition out of that. So I was still collecting a little paycheck through April. And then I've done some other startup consulting since then. So, you know, I'm having fun right now. Been playing with the markets. You know, one of my constant learnings is I always been a finance guy, so I love the stock market. So I've dabbled and had some fun in that, and it's been a nice little run the last couple of months. And just you know, kind of figuring out the next step opportunity.
And so we talked a little bit before. You've been to 40 countries in 44 weeks. You move in, you rent a place. live in that place, kind of dive into the culture of the country, and then move after a week. How many weeks in a row are you out of Florida? Did you go for like 6 straight months or 10 straight months?
So I actually went for 13 straight months. My wife's a diabetic. So she came back, she had to do doctor's appointments. So she came back every quarter, but I came back just one time in the whole travel. And it was great. We did all 7 continents, and it was moving every couple of days. I think my wife, I married an engineer. So she's got the whole Excel spreadsheet dialed in with how many days we've stayed in every place and cost breakdowns and everything. It's actually kind of fun. But yeah, I think our average in a place was actually like 2 nights. And we'd bounce from hotel to hotel or
so Airbnb you're moving around the country that you're in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so people always ask, I've been to 73 countries. You've been to over 80. There's very few people that have beat me on the countries. My goal was 100. And at one point in time, I'm like, I'm not doing 100. Because I've been to some places that I really didn't want to go to. And now my buddy Sean Baldwin and I, shout out to Sean Baldwin, the greatest travel planner in the world. We take like 15, 20 people on trips all the time. And I'll plan it, or he plans it, or we plan it together. And what we do is we pick places we haven't been. So we just went to Lebanon. And like, why are you going to Lebanon? Well, because Sean and I haven't been there. And so we'll do it. We're going down to South America for 5 countries in 6 days. And we always go to Panama. We always go to Colombia. We always go to Tikal and Guatemala and climb the ruins. And then we got to pick 2 countries we haven't been to before. And we're just dragging these other people along because I know Sean plans a great trip, but I want to get to 100. There's a few that I don't know if I'll ever get there because there's I'm looking at my list. I still have I think there's 35 on my list still, but some of them I may not want to go to. People ask me, what are my favorites? So what are your favorite countries?
Wow, this is the toughest question.
But you get it all the time. So what is it?
So one of the favorite things we did, we took a 2-week cruise to Antarctica. That was incredible. That was my wife's number one bucket list. So it was never on my list, but it was awesome. We did Patagonia. So we did 2 weeks of hiking through Patagonia. We did the O and the W trek down there.
I one time went to Patagonia for 33 hours, and it was 56 hours round trip to get there. I have another group that we would try to go as far away as possible for the shortest time possible. And it had to be somewhere that nobody had ever been, which is a dumb goal. Like, why the shortest time possible? I think it was because we had little kids. So we'd fly all the way there, Patagonia, got there night, went to the glacier, came back night, flew back. And then it's with my boys. So then I do it again with my wife. And then I spent a whole week down there. So Patagonia, Antarctica, what else?
I love Lebanon. Speaking of Lebanon,
how long ago did you go?
I was there in June. So before all the craziness.
He's wrong. I was there in June. Lebanon sucks. Did you have people try to kill you? Because I did. Did you have people following you and taking pictures? Did you have the government calling you, telling you that the person you're with was Jewish and you need to leave the country? Because I did, and we left.
I did not, but I wasn't with a Jewish person, unfortunately.
Bad idea.
Yeah, they're not welcome. Yeah. But no.
Although, I'm going to travel with whoever the fuck I want to travel with. And I'm going to spend time with all the religions and all the races. And I want more brown people in America because immigration is good. And I'm sorry that that country did not welcome this person who wasn't. She was like a descendant of someone that was Jewish. But anyway, so you like Lebanon. What else?
Loved the whole, I guess, Southeast Asia area. Just cheap. You know, Thailand. We did Vietnam. We did week doing motorbikes around the Ha Giang Loop in northern Vietnam through the mountains. Beautiful, mind-blowing experience. We did a month doing New Zealand, and the South Island of New Zealand is just, I mean, incredible. We did that in a van. So that was an experience. You get really comfortable with your significant other when you have 20 square feet of space, right?
Yeah. Or not. Or you get a divorce. It's one of the two.
I'll tell you what, that might be our biggest accomplishment, you know, to go spend 24/7, 365 with a member of the opposite sex is a lot, but we had a blast. And that's, you know, it was more of a testament to why I married her, which, by the way, quick shout out. I meant to say this. I met my wife through one of my interns with CWP. Yeah.
What's your wife's name, by the way? This Samantha. Wonderful person that tracks everything and
let you know. And someone had to plan this stuff. I'm thinking it was the engineer, because you don't just show up and ride motorcycles for a week. So she's in one country planning the next country, I'm assuming.
Samantha's her name. Yeah. And yes. So planning, you do a year travel, it is a full-time job planning. It is not easy. And God love her, we never showed up to a hotel that we didn't have a reservation at, never had bags lost, didn't miss flight issues. We literally, it was a super smooth year.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's hours. And I mean, I sent my daughter's friends to England to visit her. I must have spent 40 hours planning that 1 5-day trip. It just takes a while. So you didn't mention any of my countries. So I've been to everything you mentioned except for New Zealand. My favorites are Italy and Spain, because it's just out of the world and somewhat easy to deal with. Morocco, I really love Morocco. My wife doesn't. Costa Rica, which has changed a little bit, which is a close getaway. And there's one, oh, England, because that's where my family's from. I also like Southeast Asia. Vietnam for me was not a vacation. It was an education of Vietnam and Cambodia. And it was pretty rough on me emotionally, probably because I kept watching all these Vietnam War videos every single night. So it was pretty rough, but that was a good selection. And your adventure is more adventurous than most people. Most people go to Ha Long Bay and they're done. You're riding motorcycles around it. That's pretty badass.
No, it was fun. I mean, and we did Kilimanjaro, and
I saw the picture.
It was the point of the year was, you know, so we did a little Italy, and I love Spain. If there's a place I could live, it would be San Sebastian, Spain. So that's my shout out to one of my favorite places in the world. And then you got to go run with the bulls in Pamplona.
So you're taking this year that's now stretched to 14 months. You're working in this consulting firm. You're basically living your life. You know, you have these passions: baseball, golf, science, debate, travel. You keep adding to your passions. You're following your passions. You met Jack Daly, created this purposeful life that you designed by your own standard. You're probably the best traveler I've ever heard. So you could be the best at anything. You're the best traveler I've ever met, right? So you're trying everything you're doing, you're trying to be excellent in. Is it surprising to you that you actually were a millionaire by 27, that you were sort of retired by 35, that you're traveling the world? Does that surprise you? Would you have expected this in your 20s, early 20s, I guess?
Yes and no. You know, it was the goal. But then to actually achieve the goal is a totally different, you know, feeling. So it's one thing to actually have it on a piece of paper. I'll tell you what, it was actually disappointing, if anything, when I hit the millionaire number, because I was like, oh, that's it. Right. Okay, cool. Because nothing changes. Once you make a certain amount of money, it's not like, and I'm not a thing person. I'm an adventure person. So I still, you know, I think that I was at the time I was making, you know, good money, and my rent was maybe $1,200. But that's how I was able to make that money, and I stacked it. And how I was able to then do this adventure is because A, I was making good money, and B, I wasn't stupid with it. I had a couple sports cars.
Which ones? Which ones?
Nothing like you. I loved my M4. And I worked at a Chevy store. So I think I had 3 or 4 Corvettes.
Well, hey, I don't have the Ferraris anymore because I have kids, and kids take away your Ferrari money, but I do love the M's. And I stole the most badass X7 M 6.0, because they don't make an X7 M, they make the fake M, from the finance manager of a dealership. He ordered this beautiful car, and my friend saw it on the boat and called the GM and swiped it for me. So now my everyday driver is a giant SUV. And I love it because no one knows that it's got 525 horsepower, and I can go literally first day I got it 145 miles an hour down the toll road home. And my wife's like, don't drive like that. Like, why I got the car, baby.
And you couldn't even tell you were going 145. I'm sure.
No, you can't. So I'm into the M's now, not into those crazy sports cars anymore. And my problem with the money thing, you know, I ended up getting a lot more money than I expected. I just give it all away. So I can't have the money. I have to have the money transferred into something. I have to have a building or something, because as soon as it comes home to Jill and I and pisses her off, as soon as there's too much money, I just start giving it all away. So I have a little trick where the money doesn't ever show up in my account so I can save, because I'm not a good saver. I have mandatory pre-income saving. So what sacrifices? This is my favorite question. This will be my last question because we're out of time. What sacrifices did you make in your 20s looking back? Because you got a perfect life. Everything's exactly the way you want it. And you had to make some sacrifices, like sit down and plan and save and not go crazy with your money. And you jumped ship from some good some good opportunities into other opportunities? Which is the one you always think about that you're like, thank God I did that?
The scary one, which is leaving the GM role, which I could still be sitting there. I could still be sitting there. At the time, you know, I wasn't making seven figures a year at that job, but it turned out that dealership grew more and more as I left. And the guy who replaced me is still there 6 years later, and he's clearing seven figures a year. And I could still be sitting there. So that was, but I'll tell you what, I would never, you know, at the time I had only been to two countries. I've been to Canada or three countries, Canada, Mexico, and the US. And maybe a couple islands. So I've checked off those other 80 countries because I left that, because I got out and said, you know what? It's not all about, you know, just working the rest of your life. There's a lot to life, man. And you only have so many rotations around the sun, right? So you got to have fun and you got to enjoy it and you got to live.
And you knew what was important to you. So money's, you know, a good thing. It helps enable you to do other things, but that wasn't the most important thing to you. You made a list all your life. You've been making lists and you've been making goals and you've been making plans. And when you do that for a long time, the back of your mind, your subconscious knows what you really want. So it's easier to jump away from something awesome to something that might be more in line with where you're going. It's easier to sacrifice something that you love and all the people that you work with if you already in the back of your mind know that you need to go in a different direction. So it's a sacrifice, but you knew it was the right sacrifice because you live a purposeful life.
100%. 100%. Well, definitely not a perfect life. Purposeful life. Lots of failures.
There's no such thing as a perfect life. And failures aren't failures if you look at them as opportunities.
You learn from them. You can always learn from them. And that's the key.
My wife's sick of hearing that, by the way. No, this isn't bad, baby. We're going to learn so much from it. I don't want to learn anymore. Okay, I'll stop doing that. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for making time from travels, from consulting, to share some of your wisdom. It's been a great show. I think it really helped people figure out balance. Thank you for coming on the show, and thank you for joining us on The Edge of Excellence.
Absolutely, Matt. Have a good one.
I hope you enjoyed that episode today on The Edge of Excellence podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to this. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this exact episode with them. This show exists to showcase what is possible when young leaders are willing to step out of their comfort zone and choose to excel in their lives. To learn more about our internship for young and ambitious students, www.oneinternship.com/podcast to see if it's something that makes sense for you. Once again, it is www.oneinternship.com/podcast. Let this be a reminder for you to live on the edge of excellence in your business and life. See you next time.